Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 16th, 2019, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Probiotics for Pediatric Gastroenteritis. I can't go for that. No can do. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Crocco. He is a pediatric emergency physician and is the medical director and division head of the Division of Pediatric Emergency at McMaster's Children's Hospital. He is an associate professor at McMaster University, and he's also known for his Ranthony's and his website, SketchEBM. Welcome back to the SGEM, Anthony. Where have you been?
Thanks, Ken. Where I've been? I've been at home. I have a two-year-old now and a six-month-old. And yes, I am enjoying all the richness that it is to have two little kids, which is constantly both surrounding me with love and testing my patience at times. So I've not had as much time to do all the other things that I like to do, but there it is.
Speaking of patients, you just went back to doing some shifts. So how has life with two young children changed you as a pediatric EM superhero?
Well, I can tell you, Ken, I have a lot more sympathy and patience for parents that come in with their kids. I think originally when I, you know, was a pediatrician without kids, it was easy to sort of pass judgment on parents and why they brought their kids in. And now, you know, anytime a parent comes in and their child hasn't been sleeping, I have a real sense, a real visceral response to what that's like, and a ton of sympathy and patience for why they might come in with a child that's just irritable or not sleeping or not feeding. All of those things are crucial in a child's life, and you know, happy child, happy life.
Isn't there just this nonverbal communication where you just look into their eyes, they look back, and you understand?
Yeah, there's just sort of a knowing nod. Yeah.
Well, the most common question I get about you and your absence is, when's the next Ranthony coming, and on what topic?
Well, Ken, I actually have two ready to go. I just have to find the time to scratch out of my schedule to record them, and I could use help with that. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, like maybe I can elicit your help at some point when we both have spare time, which I know is infrequently. But I've got two topics already locked and loaded, ready to go.
Are you teasing us? Are you going to, is this clickbait? Are you going to tell us what they are,
or are you not going to tell us? I'll only say that one of them has to do with dumb drugs for kids.
Okay. All right. So you heard it here. We're getting teased about what your next Ranthony may be. And I will carve out time for you anytime, Anthony. But let's get on with the case.
So today's case is a two-year-old girl who presents with a two-day history of non-bloody, watery stools and one episode of vomiting. She's otherwise well-appearing and has normal vitals and examines normally. After you explain the diagnosis of gastroenteritis to the parents and the importance of hand washing at home, they ask you whether they should give probiotics to help shorten the course of her illness.
Well, we've covered many pediatric topics with you on the SGEM. One of them included a Ranthony on getting x-rays for constipation. This time, we are talking about stuff coming out too much rather than not enough.
That's right, Ken. And viral gastroenteritis is rivaled only by bronchiolitis for one of the most common pediatric presentations to the emergency department. The discomfort that gastroenteritis imbues, the time away from daycare required, the time away from parental work necessitated, can be quite disruptive. Even small changes to the course of this illness, due to its prevalence, could have huge comfort and economic benefit.
Well, I've just started watching Game of Thrones, and it makes me think about bronchiolitis and winter is coming. But when it comes to gastroenteritis, poo is coming. We have looked at a trial by Friedman et al. Using half-strength apple juice or fluid of choice to treat mild gastroenteritis in children who were minimally dehydrated. The bottom line from that episode was that this strategy was a better choice compared to an electrolyte solution.
We've also reviewed a couple of other papers that looked at using ondansetron in pediatric gastroenteritis.
There are some guidelines on managing gastroenteritis, and I will include those in the show notes.
This episode, we're going to be looking at using probiotics to treat pediatric gastroenteritis. The theory of using probiotics to replenish the normal gut flora to minimize disease is neither new nor unstudied. Previous work in this area has been described as being, quote, underpowered or had methodology problems related to the trial design and choice of appropriate endpoints.
So what's the clinical question, Anthony?
The clinical question is, does prescribing probiotics to children with gastroenteritis specifically giving Lactobacillus rhamnosus improved the course of illness. Now, I know that I am probably mispronouncing the name of this bacteria, and I apologize for that.
Well, I'm glad you got to say that organism's name first, because I know I would not have gotten through it okay. What's the reference?
Schnadauer et al., Lactobacillus rhamnosus, GG versus placebo for acute gastroenteritis in children.
And what's the population?
Children 3 months to 4 years of age presenting to the emergency department with a diagnosis of acute gastroenteritis. This was defined as three or more episodes of watery stools per day with or without vomiting for fewer than 7 days.
And there were 18 exclusion criteria, and these can be found at clinicaltrials.gov. How about the intervention?
Lactobacillus rhamnosus twice a day for 5 days.
And what did they compare it to?
Placebo twice a day for 5 days.
And what was their primary outcome?
They looked at moderate to severe gastroenteritis.
Well, this was defined as an illness episode with a modified Vesicary scale greater than 8 during the 14-day follow-up period.
The modified Vesicary scale helps establish severity of gastro symptoms using a 7-item scale that gives you a total score of 0 to 20. Although I've never used this scale clinically, its utility is in being able to quantify symptoms of gastroenteritis improvement in research.
And there were a number of secondary outcomes, and I will list those in the show notes. The author's conclusions were, quote, among preschool children with acute gastroenteritis, those who received a 5-day course of L. rhamnosus GG did not have better outcomes than those who received placebo, end of quote. All right, let's run through the quality checklist for randomized clinical trials. The first question is always, did the study population include or focus on those in the emergency department?
Yes, it did.
Did they adequately randomize the patients?
Yes, they used random block randomization with stratification by site and duration of symptoms.
Was the randomization process concealed?
Yes, it was.
Did they do an intention to treat analysis?
Yes and no. They did intention to treat analysis for all of the outcomes except for side effects, where they used as treated instead.
The study patients were recruited consecutively?
Yes, they were.
Were the patients in both groups similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Not exactly. There were more racial minorities in the treatment arm, otherwise there were no significant differences noted.
Were all the participants unaware of group allocation?
Yes, they were.
Were all groups treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Was the follow-up complete?
Yes, it was, 97%.
Ooh, that's good. Did they consider all patient-important outcomes?
Yes, I think they did.
And was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, it wasn't. There was no statistical differences identified.
Well, there you just spilled the key results. All right, we'll go through them anyways, though. They included 971 children in this trial with a median age of 1.4 years. The median number of diarrhea stools in 24 hours was 6, and the median number of vomiting episodes in 24 hours was 3. Intravenous fluids or IV fluids were given to 13% of the children, and 5% of the children were admitted to the hospital. What was that primary outcome?
There were no identified significant differences between the probiotic group and the placebo group.
Can you break that down and be more specific?
The modified Vesicary scale score showed a relative risk of 0.96 with a 95% confidence interval straddling 1, or non-significant.
How about the secondary outcomes?
There were no significant differences identified in the secondary outcomes when the data was adjusted for multiple comparisons.
All right, well, that's the end of the results section. We're going to get into talking nerdy, and I know it's been a while. I know you might be a bit rusty, Anthony, but can you guess how many nerdy points we're going to go through?
I suspect 4 is not enough and 6 might be too many, so 5?
Good guess. You start off.
All right. The first thing we'd like to say is that it's okay to be negative. Although this is a negative study in that they could not show a significant improvement with the use of probiotics, it should be seen as a useful study nonetheless. Studies like these help us understand when we should consider the value of a therapeutic choice we're making. Taking a study like this seriously is what separates us from charlatans who promote anything they have to sell.
And the second nerdy point was about not all probiotics are the same. Much like antibiotics, we have to be careful not to lump all probiotics together. We wouldn't do a study on cephalosporins for an enterococcus infection, which are resistant, and conclude that no antibiotics work for enterococcus infections. This means we cannot conclude that probiotics do not work, but rather that the probiotic used in this study has not been demonstrated to have a net benefit. However, the burden of proof is on the probiotic advocates to prove their claim of efficacy. Until that burden of proof has been met, probiotics for the treatment of pediatric gastroenteritis cannot be recommended.
Our third nerdy point is that there is a companion study in this exact same journal by Friedman et al. And this study had a similar design, similar population, and similar outcomes, and reached similar conclusions. Now of note, Friedman used a combination probiotic with Lactobacillus rhamnosus and Lactobacillus helveticus. Once again, I am reminded of the quality and relevance of Friedman's work. X-rays for constipation, Friedman. Ondansetron use for gastro, Friedman. Juice for gastro, Friedman. You see a research paper by Stephen Friedman? My advice, read it.
Oh, I'm a Friedman fan.
Yep.
All right, so the fourth point is about the New England Journal of Medicine. And I know I've said before on the SGEM that the New England Journal of Medicine, it's not my favorite journal, but it is good to see them publish a negative study that does not promote a commercial interest. So kudos.
Our last nerdy comment is that these patients were unbalanced at baseline. There was one minor concern with the more visible minorities being found in the treatment arm and how that could have created bias in that group.
All right, that's it with the nerdy stuff. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion.
So we agree with the author's conclusions. It appears that given the results of this trial and its companion trial by Friedman, we should not be prescribing Lactobacillus rhamnosus to children with acute gastroenteritis. Further work is required to clarify if there's a role for other probiotics in this patient population, however.
All right, can you give us an SGEM bottom line?
Prescribing Lactobacillus rhamnosus to children with acute gastroenteritis cannot be recommended at this time.
How about a case resolution, Anthony?
Welcoming the parents' enlightened question, you answer that we have not been able to find any improvement in children like theirs given Lactobacillus rhamnosus. We are unsure whether we can recommend other forms of probiotics, but we are currently skeptical. We used to suggest the BRAT diet, which is bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast, but this has gone out of favor. Although easily digested, the BRAT diet has very low nutritional value and is no longer recommended. My approach is to ensure adequate fluid intake, whatever the child will tolerate, not necessarily Pedialyte, and then advance to an age-appropriate diet as tolerated.
All right, so how are you going to take these two studies? Because, you know, there were two studies in the New England Journal of Medicine on the same topic, and they both came to the conclusion that probiotics didn't work. So how are you going to apply this information clinically?
So we've got now two negative studies in the same journal showing that in children with acute gastroenteritis, we should not be prescribing Lactobacillus rhamnosus. Now of interest, a Cochrane systematic review by Goldenberg in 2015 did look at probiotics for antibiotic-associated diarrhea, and they found that, quote, moderate quality evidence suggests a protective effect of probiotics in preventing antibiotic-associated diarrhea, and that probiotic use should be avoided in children at risk of side effects.
So what are you going to tell the patient or the parents in this case?
I'd tell them not to use Lactobacillus rhamnosus or any other probiotic at this time for their kid that has gastroenteritis. I would tell them that if their child gets put on antibiotics in the future, however, they may want to consider probiotics at that time.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Sam Stevens. He knew it was in 1976 when orthopedic surgeon James Steiner crashed his small plane into a cornfield in rural Nebraska. It was this tragic event that led to the creation of the Advanced Trauma Life Support, or ATLS, course. What's the question this week, Anthony?
Ken, the question this week is, what is the origin of the name Lactobacillus?
Oh, good question. All right, so if you know the answer to this question, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive that cool skeptical prize. Thanks, Anthony, for coming back on the SGEM. I hope we don't have to wait so long next time.
Thanks, Ken, for having me. I appreciate your patience.
Hey, you're not done yet. You got to read the tagline.
Oh, yeah. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.